Mark, O mighty one, our sacrifice begins. We commence.
Welcome to Spellbird, a podcast about the Dungeon Crawl Classics role-playing game. It's time to party like it's 1974.
Chances are you've heard a ton about the new Dungeon Crawl Classics Lankmar material. In this episode of Spellburn, we'll go through some of the crucial differences from DCC RPG, including steps for character generation and some of the basic things new players can expect in this setting. Whether you backed the Kickstarter, have already explored the City of a Thousand Score Smokes, have fully dipped your toes into the River Halal, or are completely new to Fritz Leiber and his classic urban fantasy setting, we hope to uncover some of the mystery for you in what is sure to be the first of a series of acclimating to DCC Lankmar. I'm Judge Jen, and with me are my illustrious co-hosts. We have Judge Julian.
Hello.
And the ever-energetic Judge Jeff.
Howdy, listeners.
And let's kick this show off with some tavern talk.
Welcome, friends. Good to see you.
I only had one drink to calm my nerves.
Innkeeper, a drink of your most expensive.
Tavern talk.
Okay, in our cozy little tavern here, Julian, any DCC action on your end for the past couple weeks?
Why, yes. I actually fulfilled my vow to review the adventure that they had sent in and that email that we read really rather late. However, I did it. So the adventure was A Greenwood of the Fae Sovereign by C. Aaron Creeder or Crater. I hope it's Creeder because I think one crater is enough around here. C. Aaron Creeder. And so it is a short adventure. And interestingly, he advertises it even on the cover as appropriate for zero level characters or first level characters and talks in the intro about how a mix could play. But it's also really for what he calls a total of four levels total, being like counting zero level guys as one quarter or four first level characters. So it's actually kind of a smaller party adventure is what I've been trying to say for like the last 30 seconds. And it's kind of cool because, you know, how many adventures are actually written for the gaming group that actually shows up instead of the gaming group that says they will show up, right? So it might actually be cool to have an adventure that doesn't have to be modified at all if you only had 16 zeros or three or four first level guys and so on. So I thought that was kind of a cool feature, not a bug. Anyway, it is an adventure sort of predicated on the gong farmers or the first level guys going, being press ganged and making their way into the Fae Elfland woods nearby and then having various adventures in the woods. Now, I'm not going to go crazy with spoilers and I'm not going to go in too deep. I will say it sports really nice art by the author. He's quite a good artist, I would say, and I really enjoyed the adventure. So I don't have too much bad to say about it. It's a little bit, interestingly, in the same vein as Queen of Elfland's Son by Michael Curtis that just came out. But it's really quite a different adventure. It's not really a kind of standard DCC for a bigger group and so on, as I just said. It's sort of a little different take, but it does have different types of elves. It has a new class write-up for the Wild Elf.
Oh, nice.
And I think one of the cool things about it is there is a lot of little role-playing things for the judge to do. There's a funny brutish NPC in the beginning. There's little elf characters, brownies, and so on to play through the adventure. I think it's about a good con length type adventure, so you might like it for a FLGS or con game. And I think it reminds me a little bit of Elzamon in terms of the judge could probably really enjoy messing with the PCs with various NPCs and monsters and so on.
Oh, awesome.
So anyway, I quite liked it. I had a good time. The only thing that maybe some people wouldn't enjoy as much would be it's a little bit linear. I mean, I wouldn't call it a railroad, especially if it's a con game or a store game, but it does kind of keep you on the path in various ways. So if you're really turned off by that approach, you might not love it. But otherwise, I think there's a lot to enjoy there if the Fae are your idea of fun. So good job, C. Aaron. And that's it for that.
Which publisher was that put out under?
That is a third party thing, and it's Studio 9 Games.
Awesome. Yay. Thank you, Julian.
Yay.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Anything else on your docket?
Not at all.
All right, moving on. Jeff.
All right. Well, I am getting settled into my new home and actively job hunting. If anybody needs to find somebody to throw money at, please let me know. I need a job. So I've been kind of busy with that stuff. So I haven't really been doing too much gaming stuff. My DCC group that I did run a game for prior to moving to Cleveland, they have been badgering me about running another game for them and getting a campaign going. So that will be happening in the next couple of weeks. And tomorrow I'm having dinner with Samantha Echo, who runs Dungeons and Drag Queens. And the next Dungeons and Drag Queens is on October 20th. And she and I will be discussing ideas that I might have for that. So you might be getting the Judge Jeff stamp on Dungeons and Drag Queens, and I'll perhaps be running things prior to that. But I don't know. We haven't actually discussed it yet. That is TBD after tomorrow. And I also just found out that Con on the Cob is less than an hour drive from my house.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about that. That's not until November, I think. But now that that's on my radar, I've decided that I'm going to go down there and run some stuff and play some stuff. I will not be available to be there that Saturday, but I'll probably be down there for just the Thursday and Friday portions of it and then drive back because I have other plans that Saturday. But that's the gaming that I've got on the horizon. How about you, Jen?
I will try to keep my recap limited to DCC. There's a lot of Brinkmanomicon prep, which includes plenty of DCC. I finally went to get my first Doug Kovacs print framed and matted and all that fancy stuff. That was just today, so that was exciting. I've been up to my neck finalizing drafts for various Goodman Kickstarters. There's the homework for Sanctum Sacrorum, and I will wholeheartedly admit that I was re-listening to Spellburn Episode 1 as I prepared the show notes for this episode. Just Ooh. Getting back in the feel of how do we introduce a new game?
That's funny. I was doing that last week, too.
Yeah, it holds up, which is kind of nice. And I'll admit it's nice to hear my old friends, too.
Aww.
Yeah, I know. Sappy and whatnot. So, but like I said, it did help me get kind of in the old school mood. So I don't have much else to add to the tavern. I'm happy to go summon some email.
I call upon the flame to summon you.
Who will deliver the message for me?
I came here to give you these facts.
Summon email.
And we do still have a little bit of an email stack, but I had picked one here to help us get into that old school mood and kind of keep that rolling momentum going. So, Judge Jeff, would you mind?
Not at all. This one is from July 27th. It's from Vasily Kalaman. Hello, everyone. I really love your show. It's a ton of fun, a huge resource of advice and information, and I look forward to every episode. I have a question for the team. I started playing D&D in the 80s, but now only play DCC rules for my fantasy gaming, as it's the only system that really captures the attitude of the late 70s and early 80s fantasy role-playing games, with rules streamlined enough not to get caught up in the number crunching of earlier systems. My question is, how would you convert older TSR modules published for Basic and First Edition AD&D to play with DCC rules? Are there any general rules or caveats you would use for character classes, monster NPC stats, saving throws, weapon modifiers, magic items, etc.? Would you go through the module and do all the conversions prior to the gaming session, or do conversions on the fly? I really want to run a bunch of these old TSR adventures for my gaming group, and it would be great to get some tips. Thank you. And my understanding is we like the idea of doing the timed responses, so we're each going to have 1 minute again.
Oh, you taskmaster.
Jen, do you want to start?
Sure. Not having actually done this, but just witnessed Bob doing this with Metamorphosis Alpha with different versions of it, I would totally do it on the fly. But since you're sticking with DCC rules and whatnot, I would convert any gold that they find to silver because you don't want to make them too rich.
Sounds good. And Julian?
I think we covered this very question when we had Judge Daniel Joseph Bishop on. However, I will say, do it on the fly, convert the armor class really quickly by, you know, subtracting the armor class from 10 and then flipping it to be a high armor class. For saving throws, I would just flatten it out and say whatever your hit dice is, plus 10 is basically whatever your hit dice is your save bonus. And, you know, I wouldn't adjust anything in the adventure if the DCC power levels get, you know, a little crazy at higher levels versus the TSR D&D levels. Just adjust, you know, pick an adventure that fits DCC levels, which is generally like a fourth level D&D module is probably kind of second level DCC. So I think that's the rules of thumb.
All right, great. And
for yourself?
Okay. And I like your response, Julian. My only thing that I would add to what Julian said is that the power levels, which I know Julian brought up, but I know that in AD&D, you'll regularly encounter something with like a -4 AC, which would be like a 24 AC in DCC, which I don't really think you're going to really encounter stuff that's really that high more often than not. I know that there's this cool little worksheet I saw once that I'm sure I can find and we can put in the show notes that just showed you how to quickly design a DCC monster based on hit die. And it's just a real quick kind of, you just go right across the line. And I find something like that is helpful if you're not super comfortable doing conversions on the fly. I'm personally a big fan of just making it up as you go, feeling it out. But and also I'd say, you know, try to make the monsters as unique as possible. If a place is full of goblins, you know, personally, I'm out of time. do what you can to make it a little less just goblins and orcs.
Well, I hope that helps, Vasily. Thank you for the email. To everybody else, you know the drill. Contact us at theband@spellburn.com. And now I think it's time for some mighty deeds.
Let the combat begin! To the death!
Why, behold, our hero.
Huh, so you want to play rough, eh? Well, take this!
Mighty deeds.
And as I said, we're kind of hearkening back to our roots here on Spellburn, so mighty deeds. This is the section where we examine the topic from a player's point of view. So we're going to start right at the very beginning. Dungeon Crawl Classics Lankmar, the player's handbook essentially, is the compendium of secret knowledge. That's where you're going to find your care gen rules and any of the new rules that would deviate from DCC RPG. So right up top, character creation. Surprise, no funnel.
Wait, what?
There are no zero level characters in DCC Lankmar.
Gasp.
Well,
clutching my pearls.
I know, right? But if you look at Fritz Leiber's writing, the characters are going to be slightly more capable than, say, the zero levels. Not enough so as to change the tone and general rules of the game, but you're already kind of hotshots out there. And yeah, there's no funnel. There's no zero levels. You start up at first level. You roll up your stats. You roll up your birth augur / lucky roll. Jeff, I understand you have a little treat for us on this one.
Well, yeah, I did roll up a character that I'm going to use as we're kind of going through this. And when I rolled it up, this is the thing I pre-rolled before the episode. I have a strength of 7, an agility of 9, a stamina of 8, an intelligence and personality of 13, and a luck of 12. Oof. But one thing I want to ask the judges here is I know that when we're playing the character funnel and we get 4 characters, there's the joke that your favorite character always ends up being the one that dies. But I know that my gamist mentality, the way that I do it, is I always look at the ones that have the worst stats that I don't really want to keep. And they're suddenly the very brave characters. So although there's no guarantee I'm going to get the character I really like, there's still more of a chance that the character I really like is going to survive. And with skipping no funnel, you're really just going to, you're kind of stuck with the stats you've got. How do you guys feel about that? And would you guys let your players re-roll their stats if they didn't care for them?
But you got to keep in mind, and you talk about no funnel. Here's some real heresy. Heresy, not hearsay.
Heretic.
Anyway, here's some real heresy. You can actually swap stats.
What?
It says so in the Compendium of Secret knowledge. By the way, secret. Don't talk about it. Okay, everybody's listening to Spellburn. Don't talk about it. So, but you can actually swap stats. So throw your play 3d6 in order stuff, Adam Muskevich and all you guys. Nope. Forget old school. We're going to actually be able to swap two rolled scores with one another if desired.
Okay, now do I need to make that decision right now or can I do that later down the road? I have to do it now.
Well, no, of course.
Okay.
What, are you a power gamer?
I would say you can wait and choose your class first, which interestingly to me comes a little later because step three is to choose your place of origin as opposed to your class.
Well, we've got some conflicting opinions here. So maybe what I'm going to do is I'm going to roll a die. And if it's an odd number, I'm going to go with the Julian approach. And if it's an even, I'm going to go with the Jen approach.
It's not the Jen approach.
Odd, I rolled a 5. So I have to make my swap now. So because I love playing wizardy characters, I'm going to go ahead and swap my personality. Who needs personality? With my luck. So I can get a +1 on my luck roll, which I'm going to want for my Benisons and Dooms.
Okay.
So that's what I've swapped.
Hmm. Okay. Nothing earth-shattering there?
Nope. My 12 and my 13 were swapped, mm-hmm. but I now have a modifier on my Benison and Dooms roll.
Right.
You're good. You got to play cleric now.
Yeah.
They don't exist in Linkmar.
Aha.
La la la.
Spoiler alert.
So moving on for our care, Jen, you've got your place of origin, and it says you can choose, if you don't know, you can also roll. I mean, there's 5 options for PCs at this stage. We've got, you can be from the city of Lankmar, you can be from the land of the 8 cities, the Cold Waste, the Eastern Lands, or the Mingle Steppes.
Well, I'm going to roll. I rolled a 1. I'm from Lankmar.
Okay.
All right, then.
Hometown boy.
And now we step into one of the most interesting, at least to me, parts of care gen for the Lankmar setting is your Benisons and your Dooms. These are things that give you a little bit of a background to your character without actually rolling up a big, huge background or having to take an hour and a half and write out what your character has done in his past and whatnot. So for this, you will roll that d20. And get the bonus for it, as you mentioned, because of your luck modifier.
Perfect. Okay, I rolled a 6, and I'm going to add a 1 to that. I have a minor ally.
Okay.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
And should I read what that is, or should I roll my dooms, and then we'll go over those together?
Oh, either way.
Well, I'll stay on the same page, and I'll roll my dooms. So now this time, instead of adding a 1, I'm going to subtract a 1 from my d20 roll for my dooms. And I rolled a 20, so I got a 19. I'm hated by a supernatural entity.
That in and of itself is enough to really flesh out a character. So
exactly.
If you wanted to go ahead and take a look at what that minor ally is.
So let's see. The minor ally, what does it say here? It says, oh, is it like ally comma minor? Oh, here we go. Yeah.
It is in this version of the PDF.
Yes. The PC has a friend who possesses a minor helpful talent and will occasionally aid the PC. Examples of a minor ally include a blacksmith who will shoe the PC's mount for free, a tailor who repairs and replaces his clothing for free, a gutter snipe willing to run errands, and similar folk. A minor ally never has any combat, thief, or magical skills and won't put themselves in harm's way for the PC. Rudeness, ingratitude, and other bad manners on the PC's part can make them lose this ally either temporarily or permanently. So my minor ally, is going to be that I have befriended the orphan girl who sells meat pies in a wheelbarrow.
Of course it is.
So I'll just put down meat pie orphan.
Yeah.
She is my minor ally.
Okay.
And now should I look up my doom?
Yes.
Okay, I have hatred of a supernatural entity. The PC has angered a force beyond mortal ken, one able to enact all manner of vengeance, curses, and further dooms on the character's head. Uh-oh. This entity could be an archwizard, a demon, a god, death, or an even stranger foe. At the start of each adventure, the judge makes a luck check for the PC. If the check fails, the entity works against the PC in some manner before the adventure is over. How and when the entity acts is left to the judge, but the various invoke patron tables may provide inspiration as to how the entity's hatred manifests. Ooh. So it says here it could be an archwizard, a demon, a god, death, or an even stranger foe. I'm going to roll a d5 and see which of those five it is. I rolled a 3, and that means that my entity is... I lost it. Oh, it's a god.
Bummer of a birthmark.
So, since Julian, we went with your rule for how I'm going to roll up stats. Well, how about let's go with Jen on this. Jen, what god is my supernatural entity? We'll say you're the judge here.
Oh, which god is the supernatural entity that hates you?
That hates me. That is trying to foil my plans.
Shilba, of course.
Oh, Shilba. Okay. So Shilba is my supernatural enemy. Perfect. I like it.
And now, just to throw this out there, if you wanted to, you could lower your permanent luck points by purchasing a second benison.
Mm.
And as written, it says that you should roll again and, you know, add your luck modifier, blah, 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 blah. I've also known people to allow you to just pick the one that you want, and then you have to roll for the doom. Say you wanted to be skilled in the criminal arts. As you are a wizard, you wouldn't need former wizard pupil or something like that. But that's going to be a 5-pointer. That would reduce your luck score by 5. And then when you were to roll for the second doom, it would be a d20 plus 5 plus the inverse of your luck modifier.
Ooh, well, just for funsies, I think we should do this then. So I'm not sure what skilled in the criminal arts is, but I'm going to take it. I like it. I want to play a little wizarding thief. I'll kind of be the inverse of Mouser. Instead of being a thief with a little bit of wizarding skills, I'll be a wizard with a little bit of thieving skills.
Right. You'll get 3 of the thief skills from the list.
Great. So let's see. Skilled in the criminal arts says that the PC chooses 3 thief skills from the following options. Sneak silently. Okay, so just list the whole thing. So I get to pick 3 of those.
Mm-hmm.
And I gain a permanent +1 bonus to the 3 chosen skills. And if the PC is not a thief, I also gain them with another +1 modifier.
Mm.
Okay.
Oh, no. Perfect. A thief PC gains a permanent +1. If you're not a thief, you just get those 3 skills.
Gotcha. So, of course, I'm going to want to be able to climb sheer surfaces because that's super cool. And on top of that, sure, let's go old school and get my pickpocketing on. It's always fun to randomly pick people's pockets. And I'll do hide in shadows. So those are my 3. But now I have to reroll because my new luck score went from 13 to 8. So I now have a -1, which means that on my new dooms roll, I'm going to be adding 6.
Mm-hmm.
+1 from the inverse of my luck modifier and +5 for the 5 points that I just spent buying this venison. So this time I rolled a 17 with my +6 now puts me in the above 20 section.
Which makes perfect sense.
Exactly. I now have the 2 highest venisons for this character. Yeah, and the highest one for Born in Lankmar is Wanted by the Thieves Guild.
Which is kind of self-explanatory.
Exactly, because I'm going around doing my thiefing without their permission. So here it says the PC likely committed the unpardonable offense of stealing in the Thieves Guild territory, and they want his head as punishment. Her head, excuse me. My character's name is Rolana. And Lankmar is a dangerous place for the PCs to dwell, and the judges should make a secret luck check at the start of each adventure. A failed check indicates that the Thieves Guild knows my current whereabouts, and knife-wielding thieves will soon descend upon me, looking for blood. This doom is extremely difficult, but not impossible to overcome. Reroll this doom if the PC has the accepted freelance thief benison.
Makes sense.
So there we go. I already have 2 major enemies, and I haven't even played a second of the game yet.
Nice.
But you're not dead.
But I'm not dead.
I mean, it's not like MCC where you could be stillborn. I mean...
That's true.
You know.
Or Traveler.
Right. Exactly.
Exactly.
Where you can die in character creation, famously enough. Yes.
Now, Julian, was there a venison that you had your eye on over there?
I have 3. I was only allowed 2, but please, Miss Brinkman, can I pick three? I only picked an extra one because I thought Jeff's character that he's generating would really go with this one, which is illiterate.
Ooh.
The PC is incapable of reading any language he speaks. He cannot even write his own name. Wizards with this doom do not possess spell books and employ some other mnemonic device to learn their magics.
Mm-hmm. Ooh. That's fun.
Which I thought would be pretty cool. But
that is cool.
The one that immediately got me from a Bennison point of view was Glorious Doom, which is a Bennison, not a Doom.
Yes, it
and
is.
And long ago, a prophet foretold the PC will die in a glorious manner. And so whenever the PC's body is rolled, you can roll twice and take the better, i.e. lower result. However, this is my favorite part. Should the PC ever die as the result of an event or combat the judge deems as glorious, he must make two luck checks, taking the worst result when rolling over the body.
That's really fun.
So I thought that's pretty amazing. But also, with a lot of possibilities for just being the biggest dick that you could possibly be as a judge, which, you know, I'm always looking out for, there is its counterpart in Glorious Doom, which sort of works the same way.
Only in verse.
you will die in an ignoble manner. His name forgotten by time and clan, and his mere membership in his tribe is a mark of shame to the Mingles. This is a Mingle Doom, I guess.
Yes. Glorious Doom is a Mingle Benison as well.
So whenever you make a luck check, you actually make two luck checks and take the worst result, which is pretty harsh.
Yeah.
It's very harsh.
They didn't attach the thing where if you die in a spectacularly inglorious manner. Well, anyway. I thought that would also be pretty amusing because I would say maybe impose it when it's particularly shameful way that you died, you know, running away from combat or something. But anyway, Jen, how about you?
I'm actually going to skip on just a little bit. I think you kind of have the idea. Our listeners kind of have the idea. There's Benisons and Dooms that are specific to the location, you know, your place of origin, which really adds a nice bit of flavor to creating your character. For trivial points, alignment here is optional. Now, not having that alignment, what do you do with those thieves skills? Well, if you look at the top of that page in the DCC RPG core book, they actually are paths. It's the path of the boss, path of the assassin, or path of the swindler, you know, for the neutrals. So the thieves would choose those paths versus an actual alignment. Now, as Jeff mentioned, there are no clerics. We only have thieves, warriors, and wizards to choose from. Mm-hmm. Warriors, of course, must name their lucky weapon and use the name to get the bonus.
But I have a quick question before we move on to warriors about this mm-hmm. option of not having alignments. Mm. So Jen, Julian, you guys are running a literary Linkmar game. Are you going to have alignments in your game or no?
They really weren't at play in the fiction. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as we'll probably get into later down the line, you know, future shows and whatnot, even when statting out Fawford and the Grey Mouser, they're neutral, maybe with lawful tendencies, or maybe with lawful, or with chaotic tendencies on the Grey Mouser's part. But for the most part, everyone's pretty much neutral and kind of in it for themselves. On mm-hmm. a whole, at least that's my interpretation.
Yeah. How about you, Julian?
No.
No, which one?
I don't think that cosmic alignment thing. I like that alignment in DCC. I think it's flavorful and it, you know, it harkens back to Paul Anderson and Moorcock and stuff. But there's plenty of room for non-alignment. I mean, I don't think it really fits Conan. I don't think it fits Fawford and the Mouser. And anyway, we could go on and on and on.
Nope, no alignments.
And as printed in this particular little book, the choice to keep alignment is left to the judge. If he feels it's a useful tool to help players roleplay, just leave it in. So,
but it sounds like we're 3-for-3. We would not use alignments with literary Lankmar, because I would also not.
Okay. Now, if you had an extremely high agility and you were a warrior, would you choose that bonus to double your agility bonus and go armorless to raise your AC?
Heck yeah.
Did that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Now, Jeff, wizard, you kind of have the advantage in that you've played a wizard in some of the playtesting stuff here. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if you remember the black and white magic specialty that's available to you.
Well, because Rolana is who she is, I'm going to say she definitely specializes in black magic.
Of course. Of course, of course.
White magic is for losers.
And
nerds.
It's pretty much self-explanatory. You know, she's going to be subject to Naemonian corruption. She's going to have spell stipulations versus mercurial magic. And my thought is we'll most likely cover more on spells in the next show that we have on Lankmar. And even as a little teaser, we'll tell everyone how everybody can have a patron, just like Fawford and Grey Mouser did, and they weren't wizards.
Ooh, so maybe I'll hold on to Rolana's character and we can roll her up some mercurial effect. Some spell stipulations in Naemonian corruption on the next episode that we do on Lankmar.
Now, if you want to continue building her, she's a wizard, isn't she?
She is.
She gets to roll a d12 to determine which languages she has.
Okay, I don't have the chart in front of me, so do you have it in front of you?
Yes.
Perfect. I rolled an 8.
In the Kickstarter edition of the PDF, it is page 15.
Oh, I'm there now. And I rolled an 8. So in addition to speaking Lankmarese, high Lankmarese, I also speak Kleshic.
You do.
Hmm.
And low Lankmarese is the equivalent of like common.
Who speaks Kleshic?
The Klesh, if I recall...
I don't remember them. Maybe I've not encountered them yet.
Klesh is the jungle-like land that's south of Quarmall that nobody has like a whole lot of information on.
Oh,
they're kind of the darker-skinned... Oh, I don't even want to say it. They're the ones with all the mystic stuff enshrouding them, and their version of ghouls are more like zombies, and I'll just leave it there.
Yeah, it was the 30s. It was the 1930s type stuff.
Exactly. I mean, I'm still totally infatuated by all things African mythic and legend and everything, but I'm so not wanting to step on any toes. So
that's fair. But I'm going to say that Rolana definitely specializes in Kleshic black magic.
Mmm. Yeah, I could see her invoking a Kleshite ghoul. That could be very interesting. And then if we follow our little table on Kerjen, we would get Rolana.
Yeah, Rolana.
Rolana would get an intriguing item. So it's a D100 on the table of intriguing items.
And is it modified by anything?
It's an equipment table, dude.
I got a 31.
You got a 31.
What's my intriguing item?
Oh, it's an aardvark heart.
31 is a collapsible ore.
What is that? Oh, I can carry around an ore with me.
O-A-R, yes.
O-A-R, collapsible ore. Okay, cool.
I mean, you could have gotten a vial of anti-itch ointment or a constable's weapon or, you know, a black toga, which is helpful since that's like the official uniform.
For the aardvark heart reference.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've got a cool little collapsible ore. That's helpful.
And then you're free to equip yourself just like you normally would. Mm-hmm. We, of course, do have new currency in Lankmar. And there's a handy little table with the equivalents in DCC currency. So a gold rilk is a gold piece. Silver is silver. The only other one that would be included in here that isn't compatible with DCC are the iron ticks. And the bronze agles, because bronze is less than a penny as well. So it's all decimal based underneath that. But, you know, as a whole, if you get a full gold rilk as a starting character, you're pretty well off. And and of course, we have the diamond and amber gloldiches for those who like the equivalents to platinum pieces.
I love the currency. It's pretty excellent.
And it's straight out of the book, and I think Mike Curtis just knocked it out of the park. Mm-hmm. Thematically, it's brilliant. And of course, with thematic play, there's very little heavy armor throughout, so a wizard robe, not all that uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're kind of presented with options at this point. Our judge could use Lankmar as a setting for DCC characters. You know, we just added the Benisons and Dooms to your wizard. We didn't make any other huge changes to her. Or the judge could run the setting in the thematic fashion, which means no clerics are allowed in your party.
Or you could run it in the Judge Jeff fashion, where not only are there no clerics allowed, but your wizard also might have a healing spell. Because why can't Ningobble also fix a broken arm?
Ningobble could, but the wizard, I don't know. Well, it also would stand to note that there is one particular benison that will be a lifesaver. And I think I have time. I can hit that in a little bit. So back to no clerics, because Jeff, no clerics. Okay, so you two have played. You're fairly familiar with this. So
yes.
You know the drill. In combat, you get knocked down to within a hair's breadth of your consciousness. You take a full action, spend a point of luck, and then you roll your class hit die plus your stamina modifier. Right? Sound good?
Right.
Yes.
It does.
But you can only do that once per combat. Well, okay, that kind of sucks. And if you're a thief, you only get to spend that one luck. You don't get the luck die on it. Which means you're going to be hitting zero in combat pretty quick. And just like in DCC RPG, you hit zero hit points, you're unconscious, you're bleeding out as normal. Now, somebody could come by and heal you with a magical unguent, maybe a salve, and you would gain the normal amount of hit points and act normally on the next round. Or one of your comrades could come over and staunch your wounds. You would still be at zero hit points. You're no longer bleeding out, but you are unconscious, and you remain vulnerable to that coup de grace. If you survive to the end of the combat, you can spend a point of luck, regain a single hit point, and then whether or not that stamina loss occurs, like it does in Death and Dying, becomes optional at the judge's discretion. Because, let me tell you, in the campaign playtests, we had quite a few decrepit heroes. We even had a wizard with a broken leg that hauled himself around with us for a month or two until it healed. Because he didn't want to be totally out of play. And once you're outside combat, you can take what's called as recuperation. It takes between 10 and 30 minutes, so D3 turns for those of you judges. Spend a point of luck, and you get a little bit of a bonus on this one because you roll your hit die, you get your stamina modifier, and you get your level back in hit points. And then you can get the benefit of any healing item or restorative used. And it gives you a fancy little table for all of the, shall we say, over-the-counter beverages that you might imbibe at some point. And usually you can only do the recuperation phase once per day. There's an optional rule to do it based on your level. And this is where the healer benison is invaluable. If they're the ones using a salve on you, they add their int mod or their class level, whichever's greater, to the number of hit points you gain. And if they're using a salve on you, which are quite pricey at 10 gold each, that bonus that you get goes from a D4 to a D6 hit points, and they can cure your diseases faster.
Very helpful. I like a lot of this. My first thought about this is it reminds me a little bit of like healing surges from which I believe were introduced in 4th edition. And I was not a fan of healing surges back in the day.
I'm not familiar.
But also, yeah, it's a outside of combat, you can kind of take a long rest and then you roll some hit points back. But part of it was also I didn't really like how it was presented because it felt very video gamey. It didn't even just the name healing surge. Like it felt like I'm just kind of like buckling down and just like using like my inner power to like suddenly heal my wounds. And it felt very cartoony and I didn't really care for it. But now that I've been reading a lot of Appendix N stuff, the Conan stories, the Fafnir and the Grandmaster stories, it's really common for them to sustain some kind of an injury in battle. And then after the combat is over, they bind their wounds. You know, they wrap some, they tear off a cloth from their shirt and tie up the big cut on their arm or the big slice on their forehead or whatever. And sure, they're kind of beaten up for half of the story, but they do seem to kind of recover fairly quickly from it. So I feel like it's still very much in the literary style of sword and sorcery to kind of have some kind of mechanism that allows for that.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the reasons why even during our playtests, you know, if we could add a thematic reason for why a restorative would be at hand, the warrior might get that chance with the deed die, or with a successful deed die roll, I should say, to duck under a table and chug down a flask to do that really quick in-combat heal. Whereas regularly, those restoratives couldn't be used unless you were taking that long recuperative period. You have to kind of make it work within the story or within the fiction, like you were saying.
It does have a really nice, it's the opposite in my thought of the healing surge. And I am familiar with that fourth edition idea. I mean, it has the restoratives in particular have a whole list of the different drinks to be bought and their pricing. And, you know, so instead it's the opposite of the generic. Oh, you know, I sort of flex my muscles and remember my mom, and then I'm right back in the battle.
And I can just see that cartoonish blue glow around the room,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. So instead, it's like, oh, you know, yeah, this thing cost me 2 silver smirdex, but I'm still going to down my Tovilsis strong wine and, you know...
Oh, yeah. Bubbly wine of Ilthmar goes a long way.
Yeah, it's just nice. More flavorful. No pun intended.
Hard.
Yeah, no, I get that. So I do have a question about hitting 0 hit points in combat. Is the rule still the same where you have a number of rounds equal to your level to receive that magical unguent or get a comrade to staunch your wounds? Or is that no longer necessary?
Well, that falls under the traditional death and dying or death and dying segment. I think page 79, I want to say, in DCC. Mm-hmm. I could be off by a page or two.
Sure. But it's still like it is in the DCC core book, right, where it needs to happen within a number of rounds.
And that's where that sidebar about the decrepit heroes comes up, really, because of that year-long campaign play that we had where, okay, the wizard's leg was broken, but he fell again and crap, now he's like down to 2 stamina and totally out of play, as is everything that was surrounding him. So now he's got a new character in and just a really weird dynamic going on. So it is possible to, you know, like I said, judge discretion, which is ultimately what it always is, but you could waive that rule if you wanted to be a little bit more literary Lankmar, because no heroes really fall unless they're dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if something happens where they have no luck remaining, they can't spend that to regain that single hit point, and nobody else has any fleeting luck that they can, you know, push towards them. Yeah, they're kind of screwed, man. 0 luck is 0 luck. Otherwise, you remain unconscious, and if nobody stabilized you, dude, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a little bit rough. Yeah, I would say if you're playing with the traditional death and dying stuff, yeah, if you're first level, you've got 1 round to get to your comrade before they're dead.
Okay. Yeah, because now that I'm looking at the rousing dying character section, I'm not seeing any reference to it having a number of rounds equal to your level. But for some reason, I had never noticed this. I mean, this is a new rule system, but I hadn't noticed after the battle is over, you can spend 1 point of luck to regain a single hit point.
Mm-hmm.
So really, if you're playing it this way, you can die in every die. You can go down to 0 hit points in every battle, and you're just kind of out of the battle.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of each one, you lose a luck point until you quite literally run out of luck. When are we rolling the body then? If you can always spend a luck point to gain a hit point back.
And that's why it starts out with, you know, he begins dying per the rules. Oh, it's right in front of me. I'm sorry. It's DCC RPG page 93. So you want to go.
Oh, yes, yes.
Staunch
thank
his
you,
wounds.
Yes. Thank you. Yes.
Otherwise, he continues bleeding out.
Mm-hmm.
And bleeding out is bleeding out. So staunching wounds is important.
Yeah, that part I get. I guess the part I'm hung up on is the final paragraph in the Rousing Dying Character mm-hmm. section. It says, once the battle is ended, the incapacitated character can spend 1 luck to regain a single hit point and become conscious. Mm-hmm. So if you can do that, why would you roll the body? Or when would you ever need to roll the body if you could always spend a luck point?
You're not considered to be at 0 hit points and unconscious until someone has staunched your wounds. Otherwise, you are bleeding out.
Oh.
A bleeding out character can be saved from death by either applying a magical unguent or by staunching his wounds.
Okay, so one of those two things have happened, then I can spend the point of luck.
Right.
But if those things have not happened, then I'm rolling the pot.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I understand now.
That's okay.
Yes.
That's okay. It's new. That's the purpose of this, right?
Exactly.
And, you know, I mentioned a key phrase that I know we've thrown around a lot on the show before because we got to play with it and we got excited. We go through plenty of luck with all this with no clerics around. So in comes the fleeting luck, which is probably been the most popular part of this rule system since it started getting playtested, right?
Yep.
You guys know the drill. It's a one-for-one basis. You can spend it for yourself or others at the table. If you are a thief and you're spending a point of fleeting luck for yourself, you can roll your luck die and increase that, you know, as a first level. It could be anywhere from 1 to 3 points of luck that you would end up spending. If you are a thief and you spend a point of fleeting luck for somebody else at your table, they get 1 point. If somebody else gives you a point of fleeting luck to spend, you get 1 point. So it's a one-for-one basis. There's no halfling stuff going on, unless you're something weird like the split soul benison, where you've got the partner in crime that you guys can just swap luck back and forth. Keep it simple. It's one-to-one basis. And as you know, you roll a natural critical success on any roll, and you get a point of fleeting luck. Pull off a daring feat. Act in true accordance with the literary theme. Use one of your dooms in play. You realize, you're talking about Shilba over there. I really shouldn't deal with Shilba. Shilba wants my head. No. You know what? You just told me a better way to kill you. Here, have a point of fleeting luck, man. Even something as simple as making the judge laugh. Anyone who's played with me knows that the luck there runs fast and free. Lose the fleeting luck by rolling a natural critical failure, and everybody at the table loses it.
Boo!
Which also happens plenty.
I hate when that happens.
And we'll probably throw stuff at you, too.
It's been done.
Yeah, I'll flip the table and storm off. Yeah. This game sucks.
Thank you, Gary.
And, you know, again, fancy bonus words, judge's discretion. Fleeting luck can always become permanent luck. And you can also regain your permanent luck by carousing, which we will also touch on later. Like I said, this is the first in a series.
Yeah, but fleeting luck becoming permanent per judge's discretion. Mm-hmm. Would either of you two allow for that? And if so, how?
If you complete a really critical mission and you still have fleeting luck on the table in front of you, sure, flip it over. It counts as permanent luck now. Or add it to your sheet.
How about you, Julian?
Don't know.
See, I say that knowing that it very rarely happens.
Yeah, and I don't, because the things that come to my mind, or if they have luck at the end of the session, maybe you can change that over. Or if they have 2 or 3 points of luck and wanted to trade that in for a permanent point of luck, they could. But the reason why I don't really like any of those is that what I love about fleeting luck is it encourages everybody to spend their luck and not hoard it, because you want to spend it prior to anybody rolling a one. So I also wouldn't necessarily want to throw in a mechanism that's going to give them any incentive to hoard it.
Yeah, I agree. And Linkmar is a creation, you know, a world or whatever, a milieu in which luck turns, right?
Oh,
it's
yes.
It's kind of there's a wheel of fortune there where you, one day you're up, one day you're down. And especially the Favred Mouser stories, they often have the tables turned on them, or sometimes manage to turn them on others. So yeah, it seems like just thematically not right to me. So probably not.
Well, I will put this out there. I ended one game with a single point of luck, or of fleeting luck, remaining on the table in front of me. I had started with a grand total of 8 permanent luck, and I was down to 2 of those. So that remaining little token or chit or what have you put me up to 3 out of 8 for my luck score.
Okay.
It didn't increase my total permanent luck capacity, but it meant that I didn't lose it in between games just because it was fleeting luck on the table.
Okay. I also just had an idea, and sometimes I just need to like talk out loud in order for ideas to come.
I love that.
And also, because you saying the word chit made it kind of come to mind too. What if I've got a bag full of my fleeting luck tokens, but there's one or maybe a very small number of special tokens in there. And if when I toss it out, you get that special token in front of you, like the red fleeting luck token or something, that's actually a permanent luck.
I like it.
Because in our normal games, we throw around permanent luck.
I like it, but I don't, because fleeting luck is really all about helping the table as a whole. And it makes everybody work together as opposed to being in it for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, why the hell would you do that?
You know, not all of us play chaotic fighters.
What?
I know, right?
I don't know why anybody would do not do that. But I will say, Jeff, we're going a little far afield, but I think you could have an interesting little kind of house rule or methodology there where you offer permanent luck. You use fleeting luck as written, but you offer permanent luck separately, almost like in Fate, like you use compels or that kind of thing, where you say, you know, guys, if somebody wanted to go down the dark alley where you know something's bad is probably going to happen, but put yourself in a dangerous position in a sort of typical literary way, then I'll give somebody a permanent luck point for that. That's probably too stupid a thing to do for a whole permanent luck point, but you get the idea.
So you'd want to use permanent luck as a way of goading characters.
Goading characters, yes.
Yes. I love it. Love it.
That's, yes. I'd use it, you know, first you get luck in Care Gen, and then you would be goaded into getting some characters so that you could Burnick later.
Oh! Well done.
Yes, thank you.
Ouch.
Thank you.
Okay. I feel like I sounded a little school marmy there. But as long as everyone understands where we're off to, I'm hoping to actually use this little tutorial as a method of grabbing some players for online games and giving them a little Lankmar 101 and maybe run a couple quick scenarios and impromptu online games. I mean, what could go wrong, right? I know, right?
What I heard is an actual play Spellburn podcast set in Lankmar where Jeff and I get to play two legendary heroes.
I think I'm going to move to Mercurial Magic now, if y'all don't mind.
All my life I've studied the black arts.
She was a kind of magician.
Mercurial magic.
And just a quick little bit here, mercurial magic, again, resurrecting from the original format, where we would discuss it from the GM point of view. So I think we've each got a couple things we wanted to highlight as our favorite parts as a judge. Julian?
Well, I would say, and of course we'll link it in the show notes, but we've touched on a lot of great GM stuff, by the way, so I don't feel any need to go back over because that stuff is so great. There's so much in player things that is also for the judge. But the Kovaxian map that's been produced, have you guys had a chance? Jed, you must have seen it.
Yeah.
The world or the city?
The city.
Okay.
The city. It's stunning.
Yes.
It's just awesome.
Well, both are cool.
And I really, really want Goodman Games to print it out on canvas the way that Talanian printed out the Astonishing Swordsman and Sorcerers map on canvas. I want that Lankmar map.
Yeah.
Well, I know he said he was going to have to deal with it in the box set before he can entertain ideas for future production. But yeah, I'm kind of with you there.
Yeah. He better start entertaining.
We'll bring the wine.
I will accept a hyperlinked virtual Lankmar map where you can just point and click on any structure in Lankmar and Michael has to stat out the, you know, write up and stat out the inhabitants.
Oh.
So that, you know, you're running down Festival Street, you dodge into that third house on the left and suddenly, oh, you know, it's a weapons broker and Yes.
Wait for DCC number 7. There's a dozen Lankmar locations coming out for you.
Oh, there you go.
A dozen?
Well, a dozen with options. There's tables. There's always tables.
Oh, well, yeah, okay. Yeah. Tables could be one way to do it. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Anyway, I love the map. Yeah. The map's it's a thing of beauty.
Jeff?
Great. So I would say that the Bennisons and Dooms are probably my favorite parts of this as both a player and as a judge. From a player perspective, I love that it kind of gives me an opportunity to incorporate some level of kind of backstory multiclassing. Because one of the things that I love about appendix and literature and find a pain point with most fantasy role-playing game systems is that in appendix and literature, your wizards are running around with swords and your thieves have a little bit of a history with magic or whatever. It's not usually so clearly delineated as wizard, thief, fighter, cleric in the source fiction. Mm-hmm. So I think Bennisons and Dooms are a great way of kind of adding that extra layer to it. Then from the judge's perspective, I mean, just rolling up Rolana, like already she's got her minor ally, the meat pie orphan, and she's got the hatred of Shilba and the hatred of the Thieves Guild. We have so much fun story building components right there just for this one character. Now imagine if you've got a table of four or five players and each of their characters had these kinds of things. It's going to take me out of my comfort zone and make me have to change a lot on the fly. And that sounds really fun and exciting for both the players and the judge. So I'm a huge fan of those.
Yes. The first time I ran something off book at a convention was Gary Con 2 years ago. And yeah, I had eight people with all of a sudden all these Bennisons and Dooms and carousing results. And just the Bennisons and Dooms, I'm going, I'm in over my head. But it turned out glorious.
Yeah.
You know, I've got to say that the flavor here really fits the fiction. Having gone back and forth between Liber and these writings for, as you know, over a year, everything from the currency, the feel of the gritty fights, and God, even the artwork. I mean, if some of our listeners did not subscribe to the Kickstarter, maybe you guys are late in hopping onto the DCC train here. Janelle Jaques has a beautiful full page piece on like page 3, and it just all of the art within this really encapsulates the feel of Liber, including those maps, Julian. And I think we can all agree that Fleeting Luck is something that will probably find a place at nearly every DCC table.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, we go over to Patron Bond.
Who are you?
Your new lord and master.
What orders from Mordor, my lord?
Oh, don't grovel. One thing I can't stand, it's people groveling.
Go ahead.
Patron Bond.
And as our old-time listeners know, this is where we're going to evaluate the setting, at least as it's been explained thus far, and we award it a critical hit, miss, or fumble. So, lightning round. Judge Jeff.
Critical hit. This is my favorite piece of gaming writing since the DCC RPG core book. The Fleeting Luck and the Bennisons and Dooms and the stuff that we haven't gotten to yet, including the magic stipulations and the Nawonian corruption tables. It's my favorite thing that I've seen in many years. I'm absolutely flabbergasted by how fantastic Linkmar is.
Woot! Judge Julian.
I'm going to dispense with the usual choices. And
rude.
I will award it a second edition.
What?
Oh!
When I was reading through this yesterday, I thought to myself, this is almost like somebody decided, because it's, I mean, obviously it's not a second edition. I understand this. Hold your hate mail. But I really think that it's almost like somebody decided to really just take the DCC rules out for a different spin while really trying to remain true to the game. And they've touched a lot of the core mechanics like the funnels and the luck and, you know, getting rid of clerics and all this stuff. But kudos to Michael and the whole team, because I think they've addressed some of the things that people don't like about DCC sometimes, while still having something that's 100% Appendix N and still fun to play for every DCC player and so on. It just struck me as a whole different implementation of what we've all known and loved. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun for a long time.
Okay, I'll hold my hate mail.
Please, please.
I don't think anyone has to guess what my answer is, but we'll just for the record say critical hit across the board, and thanks to everyone for their patience. My goodness. So on that note, you know the drill. Email us theband@spellburn.com, leave iTunes reviews, heck, leave some comments on the website, you know, on our blog posts. It's kind of boring over there these days. Give me something to read. If you're over on G+, you may have seen a note that I left about possibly accepting some bumper submissions. We know that our viewership, as it were, is diverse, and DCC evokes a different feel for everybody, so we look forward to hearing what it sounds like for you guys. And again, thanks to the wonderful, wonderful Hector Cruz, who has been making this show happen lately. Thanks also for listening to my ragged voice all night. You guys got anything left?
No.
Nor do I.
And this is why I love you guys. Okay, so on behalf of Spellburn, thanks very much for listening, and game on.
Spend your luck before it flies away.
Game on, second edition.
I will cut you.
I'm sure Hector will cut me.
Cut me, cut me, cut me.
You've been listening to Spellburn. Copyright 2017. Our theme song has been graciously provided by Glitter Wizard. Learn more at glitterwizard.bandcamp.com.
This has been a Hectophonic production.